Welcome to The Grow Show, brought to you by Marty Grunder's Grow Group, where we specialize in helping landscaping companies to clarify their platform, grow their people, build their processes, and realize profits. Everything we teach is grounded in real experience. Our team is actively involved in the day-to-day operations of Southwest Ohio's Grunder Landscaping Company. New episodes are released weekly on Wednesdays and are made possible with the support of Bob Yard. Remember to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Now here's your host, Marty Grunder.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever the case may be. This is Marty Grunder from Grunder Landscaping Company and The Grow Group. Thanks for downloading The Grow Show. Today, we're going to talk about something that isn't on everyone's mind right now, but it should be if you're a snow and ice fighter, and that is planning for the upcoming season. We've got the brilliant Phil Harwood with us from Snow Fighters Institute. Phil, give a wave.
I'm here.
But first, a reminder, you can get the latest edition of The Grow Show delivered to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts or watch us on YouTube for the enhanced learning experience. The Grow Show is the greatest thing since Maui brand sunglasses, folks. These are my favorite sunglasses. I have them in two colors, this Grunder Green, if you will, and Grow Group Blue. Yes, I'm anal and I have OCD. And recently, these green ones needed a repair. I was afraid I was just going to have to throw them out, and they're not cheap, but thanks to the incredible people at Maui Gyms, I shipped them back to their repair facility and got them back in under a week for $15. So to Colin at the Maui Gym customer care team, you guys rock, folks. And in today's world where it does seem service is eroding, it was so nice to see a stand-up company like this. And I might just... That might be the only brand of sunglasses that I buy from here on out are Maui Gyms. All right. I'm not getting paid a dime by Maui Gyms. Great job. Okay. Today we're talking about something that's probably not on your mind, or maybe it's not on your mind right now, but it needs to be. It's the middle of summer. Crews are busy mowing grass, installing landscapes. You're stressing. You're probably taking Gatorades and maybe you're having milkshakes at the shop or whatever you're doing, trying to stay ahead of the heat. But companies that consistently have great snow seasons are already planning for them right now. And that's why I'm excited to have on our strategic partner, Phil Harwood from Snow Fighters Institute with us today. Phil has worked with contractors all over North America and has helped companies improve every aspect of their snow operations, including Grunder Landscaping's, from pricing and planning to equipment to staffing and even profitability. He's a legend in the industry. Excited to have you with us here today, Phil. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for the invitation. And I have some Maui Gyms out in my truck.
Do you really?
I do.
Yeah, it sounds stupid, Phil, but I'm so impressed. Like, you can't get anybody. Half the people I call now, they don't ask. Mm-hmm. I bought a charging cable for my truck that was supposedly this high quality cable. I've had it 2 months. It doesn't work. I've emailed customer service 3 times. I finally said screw it and bought like 7 of them for $12 from Amazon. They'll probably all last a month. It just seems in some way service is dead, and I wanted to give them a plug, and I wanted just to remind everyone, like, service matters, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that today. Quite frankly, you're not going to be able to do a good job if you're not ready for the season. So let's start with an odd question. Why should someone who's mowing grass in July be thinking about snow right now?
I mean, it's a great question. It really kind of brings up a couple really interesting and important concepts to talk about. And I think that'll serve as a good foundation for what we're going to be talking about today. And I believe, Marty, we talked about even doing another follow-up here shortly after this, because we have so much content.
So much content. We're going to do 2 parts. There's going to be this one today, and the next one after this is going to be part 2, because for snow fighters, man, honestly, there's nobody better in the country to learn from than you.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm just going to pass along what I know, what I've learned over 40 plus years in the industry. So the first thing that comes to mind when you ask that question really has to do with that we have these kind of different categories of snow contractors. So we have, you know, there's plenty of people in the industry who really are still seeing snow as just something to do in the winter. It's almost an afterthought. They're really not investing heavily in the business. And I think that's a huge mistake. And we're going to talk about that today on this podcast. But the other end of the spectrum are these snow pros who have really made this investment and are really approaching the snow season as a year-round 12-month business. And they're crushing it because they've made that investment. They've made snow a priority. They've realized how profitable snow can be if it's set up right, and they're taking advantage of it. So that as soon as the winter ends, planning for the next season begins right away. So they're reviewing contracts, they're meeting with clients, they're actually renewing contracts and doing sales work sometimes, like right at the end of the winter, which is amazing. But then also they're dealing with equipment. So like lining up equipment for next year, that takes time. You have to, you know, analyze what you have. And if you haven't done all that end of season work that we talk about on the webinars, go back and watch the webinars that are on the website. We talk about best practices for shutting down the winter. If a contractor hasn't done that, they're really behind the eight ball. So like lining up equipment is priority right now. There's lead times involved in that. Even on the labor side of things, there's work to be done today on the labor side of the equation to assess your compensation plans, all your recruiting processes and your recruiting tools, even who's going to be doing recruiting, but incentives and onboarding and training. If you wait until October or late September to think about all this, like, you're so far behind the eight ball, right? You've probably learned that in your business, Marty.
Well, I just, when I'm listening to you, it reminds me of one of my mentors. Dave Sullivan was a tremendous mentor to me. I worked with him from about 1997 till probably 2015. He taught strategic management at the University of Denver. And then he was on the staff of Aileron, which is a think tank, a school for entrepreneurs here in Dayton, Ohio. And I remember him saying to us one time, and it was one of his monikers that he kind of said a lot. And I've said this, you know, I give him credit for it, but I say it all the time as well, Phil. And it's this concept around all planning is good. You know, the sad truth is most Americans spend more time, money, and efforts planning their vacations than they do their businesses. And we all have heard that profit is no accident. And so profit comes from all of these things you're talking about. The labor, the equipment, what accounts we're going to do, all the strategic side, the underpinnings, the foundation of a successful snow operation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've been doing this a long time. I know you were part of SIMA originally. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that and some other things, resources and things we should be thinking about here as we get ready for the upcoming snow season.
Yeah, you mentioned SIMA. If you're not involved in SIMA, SIMA is the Snow and Ice Management Association, so trade group for the industry. Great people, great way to bring people together. And I've been involved in so many different things with SIMA over the years. One of the really cool experiences I had several years ago, there was a think tank, and a whole bunch of us snow contractors all huddled up, met in this beautiful historic hotel. I can't remember the name of it. I should remember that. It was in Washington, D.C., right by the Capitol. It was super cool. And basically, we were trying to solve some of the deepest issues in the snow industry. And one of the resources that came out of that experience was this process called a snow service procurement 52-week visual timeline. It's a free resource from SIMA. Yeah. It's probably one of the most powerful tools I've ever seen in the industry because it's a visual depiction of the entire year, season by season, all four seasons. It's not, you know, it maps the entire the year round, all 12 months, from the perspective of the customer and then from the perspective of the contractor. So from the contractor's perspective, you know, there's so many things that need to be done for a true snow business every single month of the year. And then the point with the customer is, hey, move up your RFP process so we can get a decision made earlier in the either in the summer or late summer, early fall. And if we move past that early fall time frame, we're getting into a danger zone. And this document clearly articulates the danger zone. But what I love about this document, this resource, and again, it's free, is it showcases how critical it is to think about your snow business as a year-round, 12-month business, not just an afterthought that you start thinking about, you know, in August and September.
And I, as I'm sitting here thinking, I'm thinking about it's very easy for me to say something like a firefighter not being prepared, or a police officer, or a surgeon, or an airline pilot, or a Navy SEAL, right? And it's that purpose, that organization, all that stuff that makes a difference in being a good snow pro, is it not?
Mm-hmm. 100%.
What other things there about mindset comes to mind as far as this being different? Because I know we've had challenges with that on our own team. In fact, one of our best managers 5 years ago basically said, didn't want to be a part of snow. How do we get a snow pro to focus on the purpose, the reason, the why, and see this snow business has an essential emergency service, which I know is what you have referred to it on many occasions.
Yeah, for sure. This is another foundational element we're talking about here at the onset. There's so many snow professionals that come up to me almost apologetically and say, you know, I know you always say you love snow. I love snow because I do. I've always loved snow. I grew up in snow. I was always out in the snow. Love everything about it in the snow business.
If you're in Northern Michigan, like where you live, you better love snow.
Yeah, for sure. But there's so many people that say, you know, Phil, I got a secret. I hate snow. And, you know, I mean, I get it, right? There's this almost like PTSD that comes with like, I don't want to think about snow. So I think there's probably owners out there who just don't want to think about it. They don't want to relive the PTSD. They want to kick the can down the road. It's just, it's not something they naturally gravitate toward. And I think the best analogy, you mentioned firefighting, and I think that's truly the best analogy. And the way I always like to talk about this is to say, you know, if you asked a firefighter, hey, do you love fires? Do you love watching buildings burn to the ground while the family and the dog are out in the front yard holding on to their stuffed animals? Do you love that? Like, of course they're not going to love that. And they're going to have PTSD too. And they're going to be away from their families for days on end. And they're going to have, there's a burden that comes with being an emergency service provider, but there's a reward that comes with that too. And so that's what, once you realize that and you grab onto the passion and the purpose, the why, then it changes everything. Because then it's not just, oh, I'm leaving my family, you know, I'm giving up a part of myself all winter that I'm never going to get back. You don't think about it that way. You think about, man, me and my team, we kept our community open. Like, we saved the day. We're heroes.
That's not fluff, Phil. That's the truth. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I know on our jobs, we do some retail. We have a chain of grocery stores that we take care of. And oftentimes when I go to the grocery store, two things. Number one, I'm very proud that their parking lots always look better than the roads we're driving on to get there. And the other thing is, I don't know what it is about being 80 years old and having to go to the grocery store no matter what. But you see an old man or an old woman walking and you're like, oh, my gosh, you should not be out in this. But they are safely walking through our parking lot. Like, I look at that, I'm like, you know, yeah, I'm proud of my folks, what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, you know, you and I and Vince and Tabitha had a very nice dinner a couple weeks ago in Cincinnati at the SIMA conference. And some of the stories and things that we were discussing of snow removal contractors and what they have done financially is incredible. Mm-hmm. So let's shift gears there. And talk about what separates companies that consistently make money during the winter from those that struggle. Because my guess is some of the agony in the voice of these people coming up whispering you saying, I hate snow, maybe they're not making enough money doing it. Is that possible?
Mm-hmm. For sure. And it really comes down to the investment and getting involved in snow fighters and other industry events, peer groups, things like that, where you can really learn and put into place some of these best practices. So, you know, just thinking about this profitability question, you know, I always say that snow should be your most profitable service, or at least one of them. And if it's not, like, something's wrong. Like, there's something we can fix here. And I just, in the thinking about this, I knew we were going to have a profit related conversation. I think there's kind of four areas I want to just touch on real briefly. First one is just knowing how to price work, like having a really good estimating process that's accurate, quick, generates prices that covers all your direct and indirect costs and includes profit. So, you know, we're not guessing. We're not just matching competitors. We really understand our cost structure. We understand how to generate pricing that's based on our own actual costs. And, you know, either I see it, contractors developing this expertise one of two ways. They either bring someone on their team. When I was a contractor, we had a very, very extremely qualified CFO that worked for us that had an MBA. She had a ton of experience. She was a financial wizard. and she was part of our team, and she was shared over other companies that we owned. But man, what a great resource. So that's one model. Another model is just partner with someone who has that expertise. So there's plenty of fractional CFOs or other folks that'll help you in this area, but get some help. Like, don't be blind in this area. The second one is just really related to it because it's your budget. You know, pricing and budgeting kind of go hand in hand, but you know, budgeting is more holistic, like understanding how to have a business model that's profitable based on your overhead costs and your infrastructure. And, you know, obviously budgeting can get super complicated when we're trying to forecast something like weather that's completely unpredictable. But again, the leading snow pros have it figured out, okay? They have created business models for snow, and this is what we teach at Snowfighters, is how to be profitable no matter what, and that's the focus. Third thing I thought of here for profitability is sales, like knowing how to sell snow effectively. You know, you talk about Maui Jims, like those aren't the cheapest sunglasses out there.
No, they're not.
What do you pay for yours? Are they prescription?
No, they're not, because I wear contacts, but these dumb sunglasses were $225.
Yeah, my prescription ones were like $800.
Yeah, exactly.
Nope, I'll pay that all day long.
Yeah.
All day long. So there's plenty of good sunglasses out there for $180, $75, $50. I'm paying $800. That's, you're selling, they're selling value. Well, in snow, yeah, we need to sell value as well. We're selling, think about this. This is going to blow your mind if you haven't thought about it this way. Snow is an intangible service. And you might say, well, that's, no, it's not, because it's physical. We have trucks and we're moving stuff. And
I would say that. I mean, like, I want to hear the answer to this. This is good.
Yeah, we're physically out there moving stuff. But yeah, what we're selling peace of mind, or we're selling risk mitigation. Yep. We're selling insurance. Yep. That's an intangible. That's a different skill set to sell an intangible than a tangible. You're not selling encyclopedias. Okay, people, there's times, have you ever thought about this? Like, you plow snow all weekend long, and you bill out thousands, tens of thousands of dollars after the snowstorm. And then Monday morning, it's 60 degrees and all the snow's melted, is gone. All your work is history. Right. There's no evidence you did anything.
Right.
So you're not selling a pile of snow. You're not selling them the equipment. You're selling an intangible service. So that's, to be able to sell that with a value equation where you're selling it profitably, that requires training and a skill set. And then the last thing I thought about was just the best operators, the ones that are profitable, just crush it with operations. So their field operations are tight, they're efficient, they're productive, they're using modern technology, equipment, software, they're training their people are fired up, they're talking about the why, and all this stuff comes together in a really beautiful way. And I've just seen so many snow operations that are just kind of glorious. Like, if you could just sit back and watch, like, the most effective, most trained, well-trained firefighter team, it's just a thing of beauty to watch. And then you see other companies where they haven't made the investment and every snowstorm is just a hot mess. And what a contrast.
So we're on the Grow Show today here with Phil Harwood from our strategic partners at Snowfighters. And, very, very exciting conversation. We're trying to get people to change their mindset, and not just, I guess, change their mindset, Phil, that snow's a good thing, but also that all planning is good and now's the time to get this ready. Mm-hmm. So when you're working with a contractor, when should a contractor honestly consider that their snow season to begin? I mean, we've kind of already said this, but mm-hmm. let's just hit everybody over the head on it. And then I want to talk about equipment, something that, for whatever reason, everybody gets excited about equipment.
Yeah, so the snow season never ends. So it's just an ongoing, you're coming out of the winter. There's a big, long checklist of things to do in March. There's another big, long checklist of things to do in April, another one in May. And I think where people go wrong, I go back to the, you know, if snow is your most profitable service line, and it should be, okay, it was at my company. Well, and let's say, like, we didn't make any money. Maybe someone needs to plug their ears on this podcast, this show here, but we didn't make any money cutting grass. Like zero. We broke even at best. We made money with enhancement work. We made a ton of money with snow. And that was our business model. We were okay with that. We're in a very highly competitive market, all commercial. So that's probably different. I know people that make tons of money cutting grass. Right. God bless you. But if snow is a very, very profitable service line, why would you put that on the back burner for 3 months and forget about it and then go, oh, it's mid-July.
Right. Let's wake up now. And I hope I do better this year than I did
last
year.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
No, it doesn't. And I hope I do better than I did last year, but I'm not spending any time, money, or effort towards getting better.
Mm-hmm. Right. So but I think it's a mistake to go dark for 3 months.
Great point. You know, this is going to be a great episode for snow fighters to rewind and listen to again. Let's move into segment two here with equipment readiness. You know, one of the biggest mistakes I see, and you mentioned it and alluded to it here in segment one, that people wait until October to pull the plows out of storage. Walk us through quickly what you think should be happening with equipment right now. The fleet inspections, the maintenance, the replacements, the new equipment, the parts, the cutting edges, the backup equipment, the tires. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could go on for years.
Well, ideally, the end of winter process has already happened. So there's already been an analysis of the equipment. There's already been decisions made about what to replace, what to repair. There's already a good list of the we need to repair these machines, even if they're not being repaired actively because you've shifted into landscape season.
Yeah, but at least the blades are fixed. They're stored. They're
right.
The snow cleaning went on. They're painted or in the process. All that stuff is getting done.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So if that hasn't happened, that needs to happen immediately. But if assuming that has happened, the most critical thing right now is getting orders placed, because if you delay on orders, what's going to happen is inventory is going to dry up because there's not a never ending supply of equipment and supplies out there. So getting those, or even if you're renting or leasing or purchase, whatever you're doing, however you're procuring equipment.
I mean, we've been talking to Boss a lot. They're my preferred brand of equipment. We run their V-boxes, their plows, their pusher boxes, their snow raiders, you know, their sister company with Toro and Exmark and Z-Spray, great company. It's my understanding snow was a really good year last year, and there's a lot of contractors with money, and they're ramping up. I mean, I don't know that I think you might be mistaken if you think you've got leverage and you're going to wait till October. I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, the other thing is, you know, coming off a good winter, people that were under capitalized with not enough assets, they're buying up.
You're saying it better. Yeah. That's what I was trying to say. You're doing it better than I am.
Yeah. So, I mean, the other thing is just, you know, go out, set a stake in the ground, whatever your drop dead date is. Like, hey, we got to be 100% ready by November 1, October 20th, whatever that date is, November 15th. Put the stake in the ground, work backward. There's only so many weeks. Meet with your team every single week starting today and review that list. Are we on track or are we off track? We need to do all these things. We got to fix all this equipment. We got to replace this equipment. We got to order this stuff. Like, there's a whole list of things that are on the list. Like, put it on a timeline and hold yourself accountable. Hold your team accountable.
Yep, 100%. So let's just say that the contractor took all the steps right, the plan's ready. Are there parts or pieces of equipment that tend to fail more? Give us your wisdom on that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, another good question. I think the biggest failure of all is to have a machine with no operator. So I know that's not the point of your question, but you know, I mean, that as an owner, I mean, that broke my heart.
Like, where are you going to find them?
Right.
Try to go out 2 weeks from when you're ready versus now. Like, you should be looking. If you see somebody building a pool and they've got three skid steers out front, go talk to them. If you see an excavator, talk to them. Like, you set that stuff up now.
100%. To the labor issue, part of my answer here is related to that, because if you have a consistent group of operators staying lined up with the same pieces of equipment all winter, what happens is they get to know those pieces of equipment, the nuances of that equipment, and everything, even if it's a $50 plastic spreader, every piece of equipment you own has some little tweak to it, some little thing you learned, some way to make it better or make it worse. And my greatest example, I talk about this all the time, is my chainsaw.
Yeah.
Because I live in a wooded, on a wooded piece of property, and I have a lot of trees, and I have a couple chainsaws. And here's the thing. You don't just own a chainsaw. You have a relationship with your chainsaw.
Get it. I never thought about it, but yeah, I get it.
You get to know it. You get to start it. You learn how to clean it, how to repair it. You know how to make it angry and how not to make it angry. And when it really gets angry, it bites you, or it just throws the chain off just to thumb its nose at you. So, but it's the same with anything. If I'm a loader operator, if I'm driving a pickup truck, or I'm doing a sidewalk crew, and I'm in a vent track or something, or a snow raider, like there's certain things about that machine I need to get to know. Little things that are going to make that machine hum.
And not to be funny or to interrupt you, but the time to go over that isn't, you know, hey, you don't do any planning. You start hiring guys, and you're meeting them out on a job site trying to teach them how to run a snow raider.
Mm-hmm.
That's dumb. I mean, you're just asking for profit erosion.
Make the investment ahead of time. Do that training, just like the snow pros do. I do think there's some very specific things that we should be thinking about. And anyone who's been in the snow industry understands this. Tires are always an issue, right? Yes. And so it's
even
not enough to just
tires. Are
oh yeah. Issue. It's not enough to just
curb and pop one off, all that, and it's in the middle of the night and everything else. Mm-hmm.
Always.
Right.
So we got to look at tires. Anything that's exposed in the machine is going to be at risk. So hoses are exposed. So, you know, having the ability to make your own hoses or have backup hoses. And these are things, even managers, certainly like area managers or site captains or whatever word your phrase you want to call your people, they should have those things with them. I used to go through a lot of cotter pins. I had a whole set of every size cotter pin you could think of.
Where are you going to, you're not going to buy those at Walmart, a 24-hour Walmart in the middle of the night.
Right. And it's always the stupidest thing that, I can't, the tire pops off because I don't have a cotter pin. Where did the cotter pin go? I don't know. So, you know, I think tires, hoses, cotter, things like that, like the dumb things, like have those things with you. You know it's going to happen. You know it's a quick fix. You're right. You're not going to pick it up at the gas station in the middle of the night.
All right. We talked about mindset. We talked about your four steps, the pricing, the estimating, getting help, the other things. We just talked about being prepared and all those things that come into mind. Let's move into what I think is something we should be really nervous about is salt and material planning.
Mm-hmm.
Every contractor has experienced years when salt was plentiful, and then there's a year when it wasn't. I know we were hauling salt from Kansas this past year. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous. I think some of it we paid over $300 a ton for. So how do we get around that now? What conversations should we be having about our salt contracts, our suppliers, the liquid inventory, cash flow, fill and lightness on salt?
Yeah, it's very similar to the equipment equation. You can't delay. You have to get on top of this now. In fact, I think it's if you were to calendar out that 52 week, I think we're beyond where we should be in having those conversations.
Yes.
That's probably a never ending conversation with your salt supplier. Because think about this: like if you're a salt supplier, salt broker, I mean your number one customer is the government. So all those, state DOTs and towns and all that and airports and all the big governmental, quasi-governmental agencies, they're all going to get the bulk of, and that's what happens in a year where there's a salt shortage. The governments acquire all the inventory. We know this. But I think the biggest thing is that, you know, there's no more surprises. The first time we had a big salt shortage, I think was 2009, like the whole industry freaked out. And people started to figure out how to use brine, and brine's, you know, certainly become part of the fix here. But we're not surprised anymore when there's a salt shortage because they happen now on a regular basis. They just happen every few years. So we have to be ready for it and understand how to deal with it in our contracts and in our relationships with our customers. I think brine, being able to move over to liquids is obviously a part of the equation. But really what I think about is, you know, forecasting, which goes back to the budgeting. How much salt do I need to buy? How much do I have in inventory? How much can I hold? And when you sign a contract for salt, you know, if you haven't done this before, another decision is how much do I bring into my inventory versus how much do I bring in later? So that's a that gets into how much storage capacity do I have. So there's a lot going on here. There's the forecasting side, there's the cash flow side. If I'm sitting on inventory last year that I paid $300 a ton for, I have to factor that in. I have to do some, I have to understand how to cost my inventory. And there's different inventory cost methodologies, not to get in the weeds, but you know, you can do LIFO and FIFO and all this stuff. Like,
and are there escalators that contractors should put in their contracts to cover that's the salt prices?
100%. Because it's a commodity. We have no control over commodities. It's commodity pricing. So it'd be foolish not to have language in our contract that protected us. I understand sometimes you're not signing your contract, you're signing someone else's contract. But everything is negotiable.
100% it is. And these are all things. I mean, the Grow Show is, we put this out for free. Okay. We have sponsors. We just say, not that you paid any money for this anyway, but this is just something, even if you're small, let's just say you have three plow trucks and you have a successful little three snow plow operation. You still can have escalators in your contracts. Mm-hmm. If you're small like that, you're probably not dealing with bigger companies, and people have fuel surcharges and everything else. Like, it's just not smart business. Like, you got to try to, you mentioned early on, Phil, about peace of mind and mitigating risk and everything else. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're an attorney. That's part of this as well, right? Mm-hmm.
For sure. 100%. Yep. And it doesn't matter what size you are. This is smart. And, you know, we sign every contract we sign has things in it, you know, we wish we could take out, but can we negotiate them out? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Like, you have to take the same approach with your customers. Have it in the contract. If they want to negotiate something, if you need to give something else, give something up, get something else in return. So, you know, sometimes you have to horse trade, but I would start out with all the bells and whistles in my contract.
One of the things, there were a couple salt vendors at the SIMA conference a couple weeks ago, and one of them saw my name. He was in my session. He said, "Hey, you did a great job. Who's your salt supplier?" And I told him, and he said, "You know, I can save you some money if you buy now. If you wait till November, it's going to cost you more." Well, I'm like, "Yeah, of course. Why? You know, we got to think about this." Like, I wasn't upset with him saying that. I was like, "Yeah, that's a great sales line, because that's true." Mm-hmm. Like, if he can go and get all his futures contracts in, he gets a better price that he can save. And it's just amazing. You know, we see it when we do our grow event. It's not the same thing, Phil. But we do our grow event. We're going to be in Savannah, Georgia next February. And there's another event we're going to do here in September that I want you to talk about in a second. But people, they wait till the last minute to buy their plane tickets and everything else. And you just watch, like, what are you doing? You know you're going to go buy it and plan and be prepared. I mean, how cool would it be? Maybe part of your salesmanship when you go is that you go to your clients and say, "Hey, listen, we'd love to talk to you. Here's a picture of my salt bin. I already have 1,000 tons stored. Like, I don't know if your contractor ran out last year, but we won't run out for you." That might be a great sales pitch. I'm just saying, like, again, it goes, as I'm hearing you here, the all planning is good scenario is good. And just all this better way to do things, you know, interest rates and all those things, high quality borrowers. You and I were talking about that. AAA credit ratings able to that. A lot that goes into this with buying salt, right?
Yeah, for sure. And the relationship is so important. So you talk about, you know, the person who approached you and said, "Hey, you know, I can save you money." You know, I mean, do we want to save money? Of course we do. But what we care more about is the relationship. So, you know, because when inventory gets tight, supply gets tight, no matter what it is, whether it's salt or anything else, your vendor has to make a decision. Are they going to take care of you, or are they going to take care of someone else? They're going to take care of their best customers. Yes,
that's
so
right.
Who is the best customer? The best customer is the one that orders early, pays early, takes them to, like, answers their phone. Like be a better customer.
And this is funny, and I say this all the time when I teach at SiteOne Universities. Normally how they go, I go into town to do a SiteOne University. The night before, I go out with the local SiteOne reps. We go to dinner. I ask them the same question every time. What would you tell your customers if you could tell them anything? Well, I already told them this, but if you can tell them this as well, it would really help me. Okay, what is it? Tell them to stop calling me the week they need 33-inch red oaks, or they need this, or they need that. Tell me way ahead of time, and I can come through, and I can save you money, and this will be a lot easier. And that's what smart business people do. They get better and better at this, and they have a longer planning horizon. And the longer your planning horizon is, Phil, the more options you have, and the more flexibility you have, more selection you have. And it's just so important to be planning like this. So let's go on to the next one here. And this is probably the most important part of today's discussion. And that's the customers, the pricing, the big B word, profitability. Most companies lose money before even the first snowflake hits. Phil, why is that? You know, what do we need to be looking about? You know, calling accounts, adding accounts, getting rid of customers that don't want to pay for zero tolerance, but expect it. Like, that's a big issue we have here, that we're going to get rid of some customers. They don't grasp what zero tolerance means. They want it, but they don't want to pay for it. Route density, I think that is something for our model here with pusher boxers and loaders. If we can get, you know, seven hotels in a row and drop a pusher boxer at two of the hotels and have one loader in between, or whatever it is, have the employees obviously direct report, put a salt bin around the corner. I mean, there's just so much here. Talk to us.
Well, I think we've already talked about a lot of things that are essential that affect profitability, but I do have a few other items. You mentioned a few of them that are really important. Here's what I wrote down in my list, and we can roll through this real quickly or go deeper depending on how much time we have. I'm not sure how much time we have here, but
we got about 9 minutes left.
Okay. So I would say, you know, review your accounts. So take a look at your accounts to understand how profitable each account is. Best practices to do that at the end of each winter. But, you know, you can keep an eye on those accounts and profitability, efficiency, if you will, after every storm, if you wanted to, or do a sampling. Maybe after a big storm, or maybe the first storm, or, you know, maybe one storm a month, you do a sampling. You do kind of do an analysis and go like, hey, are we okay, or are we blowing our budgets? Because everything has a budget. We estimated these jobs based on production rates, hours, salt usage. Like, are we hitting our numbers, or are we way off? Can we do some correction? But certainly at the end of the winter, you can do a full analysis. Like, what happened? Okay, how'd we do? The key there is we have to think about the overall relationship, because we might have a snow contract with someone, but we also may have the landscape contract. We may have some other contract services for them. And they may have other properties. So, you know, we obviously have to look at the relationship as a total to make it an intelligent decision. But we should know our numbers. Like, we should do the math, right?
Yeah, because if you know your numbers, you're empowered.
Right. Then we can decide what we're going to do. And that ties right into my next point here is, you know, just you've probably heard this before, just kind of a basic philosophy of business that you should take, you know, your worst customers and let your competitors have them, right? So I've heard 10%. I don't know. Maybe that sounds extreme to you or to me.
But you know your numbers and you're not making money on them. And the person is also tough. Like, it's one of those deals where it's not a zero tolerance, but they expect it. You know, it could be 20%, you know?
For sure. Right. Yeah, 100%. I agree 100%. So look at the numbers, do the math. Look at if there's a path forward, if you can fix something that's undervalued, you know, we just recorded one of our webinars for July. We talked about pricing. We talked about increasing pricing. And, you know, sometimes we sign a three-year contract. Let's say we signed a three-year contract and it just expired. We're just coming off of it. And 3 years ago, we were afraid to raise prices. Now our price is 6 years old. Like, you're not going to catch up all at once.
No.
You're going to have a conversation with that customer, and you're going to step up over maybe a 3 year period. You're going to catch up all the way to where you need to be.
And I know we have a couple nice accounts, Phil, just to give everybody a perspective. There is a way to separate from the account. It's not to say, ha, I got you. You've been a jerk to me. See you later. It's listen, the account's not profitable. Are you willing to let us have an increase? If you're not, I understand. We can't service the account if we can't have an increase. Can't give you an increase. All right, I understand. You go find someone else, but I want to let you know If you find out that our price with an increase is what the market has now become, would you please call us back and we can talk? We got a couple of real nice accounts back last year because we didn't burn a bridge on the way out. We thanked them. It just wasn't working. We told them the truth. So I think there's also something to be said there for how you separate.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. If they say, well, I'm not going to accept your price increase, which brings the price to current pricing, and then they go through an RFP process, guess what? They're getting current pricing. So they're going to end up right where you wanted to bring them anyway.
What are other dangers that might be out there lurking that we need to think about?
Well, I think about, you mentioned it, but route density is so important. You know, that windshield time, that's killer. Trigger depths are a huge problem. You know,
all right. I'm not that good with that. So talk to us about trigger depths.
So that would be where you're looking at someone's RFP and it says, you know, the contractor will begin plowing snow at 2 inches and, you know, whatever the inch and a half, 2 inches, 3 inches. Basically what the customer is saying is you're too ignorant to understand how to do your job. So what you can do is go out with a ruler and measure the snow and then you can go to work. You know, Johnny boy, when it's 2 inches, then that's your trigger to go to work. Okay. So go back.
What you're saying is you probably want to walk away from things like that.
Well, we want to educate because typically what those customers want is zero tolerance.
Yes.
Okay. And they just have this trigger thing in there, but we got to get those out of the contracts. Those are things that need to be just forgotten about. Okay, we got to move forward. We're the professionals. We're going to make decisions. We're going to take care of your account. Yeah. If we're not doing a great job, if you don't love us at the end of the winter, please move on. But we're going to take such good care of you.
Isn't it possible they went to a BOMA meeting and some manager gave a discussion on how to save money on snow and they told them to do that? So somebody unsuspectingly just did that without realizing what the unintended consequences of it are?
Yes, 100%. So all these property managers get together just like we do at Snow Fighters and they all trade notes.
I'm just saying, like, you're not thinking that through. Like, okay, 2 inches, but so everybody's going to come into work at 7 on top of 2 inches of snow? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, also to give them the other benefit of the doubt, the reason these are in there, another reason they're in there is contractors historically have billed by the hour. Okay, just T&M pricing. And so it was a way to control costs, but we've moved into way more sophisticated pricing models with seasonal contracts, caps and floors, hybrids. So this whole idea that, hey, I just want to control you so you don't over service my property. So I want to limit your service. It just doesn't make any sense anymore. It probably made sense 50 years ago, but doesn't make sense anymore.
And I have a lot I can learn from you on this. Thank you. Because I should have said this earlier, like, Phil, we're pretty new to snow. This will be our fifth season with a substantial amount of square footage that we're maintaining. And I said that at Simon when I taught, like, look, I'm learning too. Like, I'm on the journey. I've been doing landscaping for 42 years, but snow at this level, this is only my fifth season. So like, I'm learning as well. And that's very helpful. What else do we need to be thinking about as we get close to wrapping this up?
Scope is really important. So many contracts are missing scope details. So we're not clarifying things like just all the extra things that contractors end up doing for customers because they have a good heart and they want to take care of the customer, but they don't end up billing for because it's not in the contract. So think about things like working in blizzards, clearing drifts. You know, if you ever tried to shovel a 4-foot drift, it's like concrete. Hauling snow that comes off awnings, 2 days after a snowstorm, like
snow that comes, you pick an apartment complex and it snows during the night and everybody pushes the 6 inches of snow off their car into your clean lot. And then the property manager calls and says, hey, you haven't plowed my lot.
Yeah.
We learned our lesson with that. We're like, what do you mean we haven't plowed your lot? We got GPS. We can show we're in there. You drive over there. It did kind of look like we didn't plow their lot because 200 cars pushed all the snow into the lot.
Just think if you could get paid for all that.
Yeah. And when I do this, I think of my buddy Bob Grover in Portland, Oregon, that we toured his facility several years ago as one of our field trips. And he said this, and Bob does a little bit of snow, not that much, but he does a little bit of snow. But the lesson is still applicable to snow fighters. He said, if you point out an issue to a customer, you have the leverage and you more than likely will get paid for it. Mm-hmm. If they have to point out the issue to you, you've lost leverage and you may have to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And that's what my mindset is towards all those details. You being an attorney, praise God, Vince is an attorney to help us. I got a big question for you and then I want to close it up.
Great.
What should every contractor review from last winter before sending contracts this year? Because I'm concerned some people have been listening to this. Maybe they're mowing their lawn and they're like, yeah, I'm going to do snow. This is great stuff. I'm going to go listen to this again. Let's hit them right in the face with what the most important thing is before you send out any contracts for this year.
Yeah, I think we've already talked about them, but it's profit and pricing.
Okay.
And scope of work. Those are the, so profit, pricing, kind of the same thing, both two sides of the coin. Scope of work, all that affects your contract. So get a good review on your contract. Have an attorney, have someone like me look over your contract. Doesn't have to be me, but I'm happy to. Like, have somebody scrub your, absolutely.
If people want to reach 100%. Out to you, I can't think of a better person to do that for.
Absolutely. Love to. Do a lot of it. So that's it. Like, get going.
Well,
it's coming.
Phil, this has been outstanding. We're going to do part two. I hope everyone listening takes at least one thing away from today's conversation. Again, the message today, a lot about planning. All planning is good. Talking about pricing, talking about the value of relationships, talking about, you know, when do we walk away, talking about contracts and what we do. The companies that have great winters, ladies and gentlemen, they don't get ready for snow in November. They're getting ready right now. And if you're going to wait until the leaves start falling, then you're going to be behind. You arguably, Phil, are already a little bit behind right now, and it's July that we're recording this.
Mm-hmm. Right, for sure. And that's, I mean, I know you're going to talk about it briefly, but that's why we're so excited about Grow Snow.
So talk to us about Grow Snow, the date, what we're doing. We're partnering with you on it. It's very exciting. Mm-hmm. I am very nervous about it because thank God we have you leading us. I know we have some good lessons mm-hmm. here and we do a lot of things right. Thanks in part to your help with us. But talk to us about Grow Snow.
Well, if you've ever been to Marty's Grow event, it's the probably one of the best events, if not the best event in the landscape industry. Grow Snow is the snow version of Grow. When I went to Grow in Dallas, February of this year, I was blown away by this event. So Grow Snow is going to be a snow version of Grow. We are going to pull together for 2 days plus a dinner, so almost like 2.5 days in Dayton, Ohio this September. We're going to start Monday night, the 21st, with dinner. We're going to move into full days on the 22nd, 23rd. We have a conference space booked. We have a tour set up of Marty's facility with Grunder Landscape. We have a bunch of the best premier sponsors, suppliers in the snow industry that are partnering with us on this. And we have some great presenters, great content, great speakers. If you think about what Snowfighters has done for a long time since its inception, it's pulled together people who want to do better in snow, who want to be more profitable, have better experiences, and really just do a better job operationally. So we touch on all the areas: leadership, people and staffing, performance, motivation. We get into equipment. We talk about sales, talk about account management. We talk about operational efficiency. We get into all the areas. So we're really just going to crush it for 2.5 days in Dayton, Ohio this September. And Marty and I will be there together. And
I'm super excited. I'm super excited to show you what we're doing with snow. We do not have it all figured out, but we've got some awesome best practices. And I think you're going to be really impressed with the event. Phil, thanks for pulling us through it. It's really exciting.
You're welcome.
I hope everyone signs up. The information to sign up is attached to this, and so appreciate you being on and helping us with Grow Snow.
Very welcome.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for this week's edition of The Grow Show. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to The Grow Show, and if you can, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more success-minded landscape professionals find us. And if you really want to help us, share this episode with your team or any landscape pro you know. Thanks for joining us on The Grow Show this week. Before we say goodbye, you're going to now hear from one of our trusted partners that we work with at Grunder Landscaping. So hear a message from them, and I'll talk to you next week with part two of this exciting discussion on snow with Phil Harwood from Snowfighters. Have a great day. Before Aspire, I had hundreds of spreadsheets running in my organization. It was crazy. That's right, hundreds. We had an entire office dedicated to filing cabinets. Now I run everything on one platform built specifically for landscape professionals. My team works better, I have more visibility across the entire business, and nothing falls through the cracks. Ladies and gentlemen, running a landscaping company without Aspire is like driving a car with no dashboard. You're moving, but you have no idea where you're going. And I know where I'm going now. If you want the same clarity in your business, check out youraspire.com.
Join Marty and the Grow Group team at Grunder Landscaping Company this year. We host GLC field trip events at our living laboratory, Grunder Landscaping Company, where we show you how we operate and how you can too. This event features small groups, you get the one-on-one attention you need, and features a full 27 hours on-site at GLC, where we dive deep into everything from operations to sales to administration. Find more information and sign up at growgroupinc.com, and do it quickly, these events sell out every year.